Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J. For the next half hour, keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left as we present a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. Speaking today with James Swayze. He's an artist, an active participant in many online fora, a transhumanist, and he's a differently abled member of all those communities, which is fairly unusual. Welcome, James.
Hello.
Now, the reason we're talking today is because of your campaign, or the campaign that's been launched on your behalf, to support your bid to become a corpsicle, a frozen body waiting for rejuvenation. We'll get to that in a second. But before we get into that, I think most people, when they meet someone who is differently abled, they want to know, have you been that way your whole life, and how'd you get that way? They often don't have the courage to ask, but I do. That's my job. So tell me just a little bit about how you ended up and when you ended up disabled.
Well, I was almost 21, and I was going through a pretty rough period in my life, and ended up traversing over a balcony of my own doing, and broke my neck.
And you broke it at the C5 and 6. Can you tell us a little bit about what it means to break your back or your neck at C5 and 6 in your spine?
Well, it means that I can't feel from just above my nipples down, and parts of my arms also cannot feel, in my hands. Certain fingers can and certain can't feel, and I can move my arms. I have shoulder muscles that move the arms. No tricep innervation, but I do have bicep, and of course the fingers don't move, but I get around that by little tricks of leverage and stuff like that, and I type with sticks in my hands with rubber tips and stuff like that.
So all those messages that I've seen from you have been typed with sticks in your hands?
Yeah. About 30 words a minute.
Wow.
If you don't count all the backspaces and spell checking.
Wow. And have you experimented with other technologies like voice-activated or voice recognition?
So far it's too tedious to give up my sticks.
Mm-hmm.
Too much training.
Yeah. But you're relatively lucky in that regard because you still have some use of your hands. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you got involved some years ago in this movement, the cryonics movement and related transhumanist and extropian discussion movements. Tell us about how that came about.
Well, actually, in about 1990, I picked up a book on cloning, and I had no idea there was anything out there called transhumanist or extropian or what have you. And I started studying things on my own, and then some years later, watching television programs on Learning Channel and stuff like that, I saw cryonics and little by little got exposed to this. And then my stepbrother, who's been my caregiver since he was about 13 or 14, came to me with a URL for the cryonet.org. And because he knew my interest in all this, so I signed on, and there was all these people gabbing about the stuff I was interested in. It was a whole group of people like me I didn't know existed.
Now, the appeal of cryonics is that why die if you don't have to? Or why not take a chance that someday you might be able to be revived and have some kind of existence after your alleged physical death in this century? Do you think that you had a special attraction to that message because of your disability?
Yeah, I do, but I'd like to think that I would have been interested in it anyways. It just depends on, you know, who knows how I would have become exposed to it. But as I got exposed to the cloning technologies and started to fantasize about maybe having a anencephalic body cloned for me in a brain transplant or some sort of thing like that in some future tech, it became obvious that maybe I won't live long enough for that to happen. So what's the answer? Well, you know, put yourself on ice. And I think that the cold water drownings and the recent toddler that was, for all intents and purposes, dead for several hours and then brought back, well, gives one hope that at least from some portion of that, that process, there is possibility that you can be revived.
Do you aspire to have just a neuro cryonic suspension, that is, to have just your head suspended, or are you looking to suspend the whole body?
Well, my body's really pretty shot. It would take what we in my ilk call nanotech to, like, remove the bone disease and things like that and restore everything back to health. However, the outfit that's putting on the fun drive for me, I don't believe does neuros at this point. And so I think I'll be getting a full suspension should I need it anyways. But I would have accepted just the neuro. Yes, I would have.
Now, Robert Ettinger we'll be talking to in a little bit. He's the founder of the cryonics movement and the director of a wing of it called the Cryonics Institute. How did he hear about your desire to be suspended?
Over Cryonet, with my various postings there. And the funny story there is that when I first got on to Cryonet and was just kind of lurking and listening and stuff, there was this discussion going on about euthanasia, and I felt it was kind of pompous, and so I, from my point of view, in the paradigm I was in at the time, euthanasia seemed like a reasonable thing to do should my sufferings get so great and should I get near to a point where I would be without any control to do anything myself. Before I lose that control, I would have maybe considered that. Well, so I lambasted him and told him what my real suffering was and this and that and a whole slew of things. And I expected to get flamed and shooed away and don't ever talk to us again. And instead, the next day, there were people calling for donations to get me a fund because, well, part of my note was, yeah, I'd love to be frozen rather than choose euthanasia, but I just simply can't afford it, and the government won't let me.
The option of freezing yourself, I think, would strike many in the disability community as an example of the kind of dangerous distractions that the disabled folks can be the victims of, in their view, if they don't focus on just adapting to their situation. So, you know, how do you respond to folks who say, you know, James, this is just an absolute absurd idea. You're wasting your time. You should be making the best of the situation that you've got and trying to do whatever kind of physical therapy, rehabilitation, social activism that you can do and accept the natural lifespan. What do you say to those folks?
Well, I say I am adapting, and this is part of my adapting. And not only that, but in all of that, I often get the message that they're not telling me to adapt, but they're telling me to accept. And my philosophy is the minute I accept, I'm on my road to death. I'm just dying. I don't accept this. I fight against it. I have invented so many ways to get around it through my attitude of fighting against it, not just giving in to it.
You're a fan, I assume, of Christopher Reeve's attempts to get more funding for stem cell research and defend it from the Republican and Right to Life movement. Do you have any hope that within the course of your lifetime you might see spinal repair through stem cell technology?
Oh, absolutely. And although it wouldn't make me walk because of the bone disease that I referred to, it would at least give me back my hands. Heck, I might become a guitar player and become a rock star, you know? Just kidding.
Is that one of your goals back when?
No, well, I mean, wasn't it every teenager's goal? But no, really, I would like to have my fingers back for a lot of things. Just tinker with my inventions on my own. A head full of them and hard to do them.
Were you very active physically before your accident?
Yeah, I'm 6 feet 5 tall and weighed in at 210 pounds when I was injured. Actually, I was 6'4" then, and I grew even after the injury and. Because I was physically active and young and tall, I ended up with this bone disease called heterotrophic ossification, and it's just a consequence of spinal cord injury.
So when you are, if you were to be rejuvenated, would you prefer to have a physical body again? One of the things that's been discussed in these circles is how we may want to just upload into the machines and have virtual presence, virtual reality. Would you prefer to be physically embodied again, have another shot at that?
Yeah, I would. I'll tell you, I'll take what I can get. If uploading is the only option, I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I mean, it's better to be than not. But there are still questions about, you know, are you really you?
Yeah.
Or a copy of you in those kind of scenarios. So, and that's another show altogether.
Well, after having your brain turned into frozen tapioca and then put back together by nano machines, people still think there might be a question about that, too.
Yeah.
Does that bother you?
No, it really doesn't.
Yeah, as long as it's your brain cells that have been put back together.
Yeah, if, you know, I mean, the other alternative is to not be, you know.
Yeah.
Turn to dust, you're not anything then.
Yeah. Well, we wish you the best, and I'm going to be talking to Robert Ettinger about the fund and how people can contribute to that and the issues that that fund raises and why he's doing it. So I hope that you hang in there. And if people want to be in more contact with James Swayze, there'll be links from the Change Surfer website, and also you can find him on CryoNet. Thanks for joining us today, James.
Thank you.
Speaking now with Robert Ettinger. Robert Ettinger is the founder of the Cryonics Institute, which is based in Michigan, outside of Detroit. He wrote many years ago the book Prospect of Immortality, which launched the cryonics movement. He's the author also of Man to Superman. Now, you have sponsored and begun this James Swayze Fund, which we'll talk about in a second. But I want to talk first about how you came to cryonics and what you've done in your own promotional efforts over the years to establish this field. You first wrote Prospect of Immortality back in the early 60s. How did that come about?
Well, it's a bit of a long story, but basically I just grew up reading the old amazing stories of Hugo Gernsback, and I was indoctrinated at an early age with the expectation that we would eventually overcome senescence and all other diseases, and people would live indefinitely. But then, of course, as time went on, it became clear that this was unlikely to happen in my natural lifetime, so something else had to be done. And, of course, these other ideas, suspended animation and so on, had been around for a long, long time in one form or another. So I just pulled together various threads, the various threads being explicitly, number one, that at very low temperatures, biological systems don't deteriorate. Number two, that death is not an event but a gradual process, and at the stage at which it becomes irreversible is unknown, if indeed there is such a stage. And, of course, the fact that a cure for senescence, as I indicated earlier, is likely to come about at some point. And if you draw all these threads together, what you get is cryonics or cryostasis as a bridge to the future, or an ambulance to the future, if you want to put it that way.
Now, in the 1980s, the engineer Eric Drexler wrote a book about nanotechnology, really launched the nanotechnology movement, Engines of Creation. And in that book, he talked about the problems of cryonics, the kind of tissue damage that might be suffered. You anticipated back in the 60s that there might, you didn't know or have a vision of nanotechnology and its specifics, but you anticipated that there might be such a technology which would be able to repair the tissue damage that's caused by the freezing of the body.
Yes, I did say that I did anticipate that eventually we would have the capability of doing repairs on a cell-by-cell basis if necessary, or even on a molecule-by-molecule basis. What I did not envision was that we would have computers small enough eventually to work inside the body. I had envisioned the computers themselves that would direct the operation as being outside the body, but of course Drexler's approach is much more elegant.
Now, you have about 38 people in suspension in the Cryonics Institute facilities, including both of your wives.
Yes.
Yeah. And so you're definitely one of the going concerns in cryonics. About how many people do you have signed up to be suspended if they were to die?
Our membership at the moment, if I remember correctly, is around 360 or a little more.
Mm-hmm. You're also one of the more cost-effective cryonics operations, the other competitors being a lot more expensive. Why is that?
Well, we have those reasons spelled out on our website, so, which is cryonics.org. Basically, for one thing, our costs are lower, and we try hard to keep them that way. Our procedures, although they're gradually developing and changing like those of others, are a little bit simpler, and we omit certain things that we think are unnecessary or even contraindicated. We have managed over the years, even though we've gradually changed and improved our methods, and in spite of the fact that inflation has constantly added to the basic cost of life, we've kept our absolute costs flat and our relative costs constantly diminishing.
Now, the principal expenses are a space and what, dry ice, liquid nitrogen? What is it that keeps people cold?
Liquid nitrogen is the cryogenic fluid that in which the patients are immersed. And yes, the cost of nitrogen is one of the main ongoing costs. Incidentally, we're reducing that cost too. We're in the process right now of installing a very large storage tank, which will allow us to have fewer deliveries and cut our costs of liquid nitrogen almost in half.
Does the cost of nitrogen or liquid nitrogen fluctuate on a world basis?
It has been relatively steady, as a matter of fact. I'm not sure exactly what the reason is. Even on an absolute basis, let alone inflation-adjusted, the cost has been pretty steady. Liquid nitrogen can be produced in various ways. You can produce it directly from air, or it can be produced also as a byproduct of certain industrial processes, steel smelting, for example.
So you're able to create a long-term plan, a 40-50-year plan of what the projected costs might be for such an operation, and then figure out from that what you need to charge folks.
Yes, and we've done that successfully. Initially, people were skeptical. In fact, we were in some cases accused of fraud by being on grounds of being over-optimistic about our costs, but that criticism turned out to be wrong. Of course, it's true that we owe some of our financial success to some substantial bequests that some of our patients have given us, but even without those, we can manage.
There have been a number of fairly wealthy individuals who've gotten involved. There's this new timeship project, which eventually we're going to have Stephen Valentine, who's the architect, who's building that 900 cryopod facility for the timeship project. Do you have any plans to hook up with that, or...?
Well, as far as I know, that's just in the talking stage. I'm not aware, of course, I'm not an insider there, so I can't speak for them, but to the best of my knowledge, on the basis of public information, that's so far just in the speculative phase.
Now, how did you get interested in starting this fund for James Swasey for his suspension?
Well, as I think you more or less intimated earlier, it's not really, in a certain sense, it's not a question of handicapped people being worse off than anybody else. From a from an Olympian point of view or from a very long-range point of view, every one of us, including the most fortunate, if he dies a so-called natural death, is going to live only a tiny fraction of the time he might have lived and enjoy only a tiny fraction of the adventures that he might have had, but nevertheless, it's still true that based on our psychology, handicapped people in their own eyes and in the eyes of many of the rest of us have been cheated, have been given and dealt a very bad hand, and more than others perhaps would appreciate a chance for a new deal. And obviously, anybody can choose where to put his own feelings or where to put his own efforts or who deserves the most assistance or help. And we all make our own decisions based on our personal values. James Swasey is a very unusual man. As a very young man, he appeared to have everything. He was tall, handsome. Well, he's still tall and handsome, but he's of course now he's in a wheelchair. He was gifted. He was an airplane pilot at a very early age, artistically gifted, an inventor. And then he had a terrible accident and became a quadriplegic. He retains the partial use of his arms, but other than that, he's wheelchair-bound, and there have been all kinds of secondary effects I don't want to go into too much clinical detail, but...
We talked to James, actually, about his health and some of his situations. So.
I see. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In any event, the point is that he not only has lost more than most people has, but he has much more potential to both give and receive than other people have, and he's got the kind of courage that awakens a spark of admiration and a desire to help him in me and many other people.
So what does this fund involve? The price of a basic suspension at Cryonics Institute is $50,000, is that correct?
No, the basic price is $28,000. And, of course, if you're not near our facility, then you have to add the cost of local emergency help and transportation, which would ordinarily be a few thousand more. So if you're, for example, if you're in the United States but not near Detroit, you would probably have to figure a total of maybe $35,000, something like that. And some months back, some people got together and wanted to raise some money to pay for a suspension for James. And there were some pledges made, but for one reason or another, it had lost some momentum. So I decided that I would try to spark it up again, and I offered to make up the difference if the other donors would make a total of $20,000. That I would personally make up the difference, and we announced that, and we've been getting donations gradually. We're not very close to the required $20,000 minimum yet, but it's growing, and we recently made an arrangement so that we can take credit card payments, which makes it more convenient for some people, through an online organization called PayPal. So anybody who is interested in contributing any amount that he's comfortable with, you have a chance to save the life of a very unusual person.
Is there some place on the web that they can go to look at?
Yes, our website is www.cryonics.org, C-R-Y-O-N-I-C-S, cryonics.org. And on our website, you can find all kinds of information about the organization itself and also about James. And there's a link to a special page about James.
So there'll be an address there as well if they want to mail in.
Yes, there'll be information as to where one could mail checks or how to make credit card donations through PayPal and everything else. It's all there, easily accessible.
Now, finally, in our last minute here, what would you say to people in the disability rights movement or in society in general who see cryonics as... You've been fighting this battle, the battle for the legitimacy of cryonics as a field, for a long time. And, in fact, the latest issue of Scientific American is devoted to nanotechnology, but makes in a number of the articles asides that cryonics is just such a wacky idea that as long as it's associated with nanotechnology, nanotechnology won't go anywhere, which seems a peculiar argument. But at any rate, what would you say to people who say... people who are disabled need to focus on rehabilitation and accepting their lot and not on chimerical ideas of stem cell transplants, cloning, and cryonics. That this is some kind of fraud that's seriously distracting this young man and perhaps other disabled people from what they need to be focusing on.
Well, actually, the fraud charge has been dying out over the years. It was offered much more frequently in the very early years. There were suggestions that old and sick people would be lining up and trying to shower their money on any fraud who promised them anything, that people were desperate to live and would give everything they had to get any tiny chance to live. But that turned out not to be the case. And not only was that not the case, but also it's become clear over the years that the existing cryonics organizations are honest and responsibly managed. Well, we don't make a nickel out of it. Most of the cryonics organizations are non-profit. None of our directors or officers is paid. We donate our money as well as our services, and anybody who wants to check up on us can do it very, very easily.
What about the charge that cryonics would be a distraction for disabled people?
Well, obviously, the question of motivation or choices, that's up to the individual. Anybody can advocate if he chooses that instead of using his money for his own comfort, he should give it away. People, you can make the argument, if you choose, that as long as anybody is starving, you don't deserve any more than a subsistence living. You can make any number of arguments as to where somebody else ought to put his money, but the choice, obviously, is with the individual. And if some choose to listen to the advice of others as to what to do with their lives or with their efforts or with their money or what they should want or what they shouldn't want, obviously it's their choice. We don't claim any pipeline to heaven or any unique right to dictate choices. We simply offer choices. We don't dictate choices. We offer them. Those who choose to accept the offer, good, will do so. Those who choose not to, won't.
I really want to thank you for joining us today, Mr. Ettinger, and I hope that the project that you've started is successful. The website, again, is
cryonics.org.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
When the river of rebellion overflows, I'll be there. When the seed of discontent plants and grows, I'll be there. Watching for the sun through the dark and rainy storm. Searching for the keys to the dungeons old and worn. Let me tell you, I'll be there. When the shadow of the tyrant falls and sweeps across the land. And when men would steal from others with a paper in their hand. When people search for answers and the answers never come. When their troubles would be over if they thought and fought as one. Oh, let me tell you, I'll be there. The whispering of yesterday has grown into a roar. Wind of freedom's blowing out of every distant shore. Oh, when the time is ready and the call is loud and clear. Let me tell you, I'll be there. When the thunder of oppression roars and crackles, I'll be there. And when those who would be free are wearing shackles, I'll be there. For the day is gonna come when they'll throw away their chains. Lift their heads and raise their arms for the struggle that remains. And let me tell you, I'll be there. Whispering of yesterday has grown into a roar. Wind of freedom's blowing out of every distant shore. Oh, when the time is ready and the call is loud and clear. Let me tell you, I'll be there. When the thunder of oppression roars and crackles, I'll be there. And when those who would be free are wearing shackles, I'll be there. For the day is gonna come when they'll throw away their chains. Lift their heads and raise their arms for the struggle that remains. And let me tell you, I'll be there.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS Stores at the University of Connecticut. If you want to learn more about democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about today's show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, that's J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. At the Change Surfer website, you can find past and future shows archived in streaming MP3 thanks to the Infos Radio Project. Also, at www.changesurfer.com are instructions on how to order copies of our shows and myriad relevant links. So educate, agitate, and organize, and I hope to meet you in a sexy, high-tech, and yet radically democratic future.